Hello and welcome to Knit Spirit. I'm your host, Evie Reisner, and this is episode 82, Angels for Afternoon Tea. My current knitting is a Skynet shawl, and I have 1.5 rows left to go and then the bind off. And for some reason, last time I did a pattern row, the pattern is that you have a pattern row and then a straight round and a pattern round and a straight round. The last time I did a pattern round, for like the first 6 repeats of it, I forgot I was supposed to be working a pattern, so I just knit every stitch. And then, of course, did the full around on the straight afterwards. So I didn't want to take 2 full rows. These rows are huge. So instead, I would drop down the erroneous stitches, pick them up correctly, go on to the next set, drop down, pick them up. I did this for maybe 6, 7 sets, and you know, until it was all straightened out again. And I've learned a lot from this on how to repair lace. I was always really bad at that. So this has been a really good learning experience for me. This is really good beginner lace for anyone. It looks a lot more complicated than it is. It's called the Secret Garden Shawl, and if it ever becomes available from the Unique Sheep, if you want to sort of get into lace or try lace, if you're like me and kind of uncomfortable with it, it's not a bad pattern to start with. And I'm hoping to have it finished sometime this week so I can have the picture up on the blog, but I'm doing NaNoWriMo, and for some reason last time the word count just flew. This time it's just taking longer to get the words out there. So that's really gobbling up a lot of my free time. This week's Parsha is Genesis 18:1 to 22:24. And that covers the announcement of the birth of Isaac, the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, all the way through to including the binding of Isaac. And Rashi makes a really interesting point on 18:2. 18:2 reads, "And he being Abraham, lifted his eyes and saw, behold, 3 men were standing beside him, and he saw and he ran towards them from the entrance to the tents, and he prostrated himself to the ground." Of course, these aren't men, they're angels accompanying God, but why 3? It's a power number, certainly, but Rashi tells us that there are 3 angels because there are 3 tasks to perform, and no one angel is ever asked to go on 2 errands at the same time. You've got 1 angel, and according to the Talmud, this is Raphael, who heals Abraham because he'd been circumcised just a few days prior. You have Michael, who's sent to prophesy the birth of Isaac. And you have Gabriel, who's sent to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. Raphael, by the way, is also the one who rescues Lot in the Sodom and Gomorrah story. I find it interesting that Abraham pleads for Sodom, where his nephew Lot lives, but he doesn't specifically plead for Gomorrah. In fact, no one pleads for Gomorrah. There's no testing of Gomorrah. There's nothing really with them. It's just spiritual nepotism. No one in the narrative lives there, so it's just destroyed. Genesis 19:1 refers specifically to 2 angels, but they were referred to as men in chapter 18. And Rashi offers 2 explanations for this. In the first, he said that in chapter 18, God was with them, and God is so much greater than all of his creations, the distinction between men and angels just doesn't seem so much. His other explanation is that Abraham hung out with angels so much, Abraham had so many conversations with God at this point, that a bunch of angels coming by, they were just friends. Lot was mightily impressed. 18 and 19 parallel each other. Abraham is sitting by the house. He sees wayfarers. He prostrates himself. He insists on offering hospitality. Lot is sitting by the house. He sees wayfarers. He prostrates himself. He insists on offering hospitality. The parallel action is meant to show Lot's similarity to Abraham and imply through that his worthiness. There is one other parallel, and that's that Sarah laughs at God's proclamation that she will be a mother, and then she denies it. She lies and denies it. I laughed not. Lot's wife disobeys divine decree by looking back, and she's turned into a pillar of salt. As to why they're told not to look back, Rashi has an interesting take on this. He says that while he was there, Lot partook of some of the sin of Sodom, and because of that, he was unworthy to see the other Sodomites punished. He's being saved not just because he's worthy, but more for Abraham's sake. Now we get something interesting with Genesis 19. We have 3 tasks here, seemingly. We have the task of judging Sodom. We have the task of destroying Sodom if necessary. That's assigned to Gabriel. And we have the task of saving Lot. That's assigned to Raphael. So who is assigned the task of judging Sodom? Is it a passive task? So it's not really a task. You can go in there and you'll just know. Or was it a foregone conclusion? So there really were only the two tasks, destroy Sodom and save Lot, and therefore only two angels. In any case, it ends with another parallel. Raphael tells Lot to go to Abraham in the mountains. Lot negotiates, as Abraham negotiated to save Sodom in the first place, and he's permitted to flee to a minor city. The difference is key. Abraham's pleading for someone else, and he's an always obedient, which is why the binding of Isaac has to be in part of this parsha. Lot is somewhat disobedient. Raphael tells him to go, run away now, and he delays and starts packing. Lot's plea is for himself, not even for his wife, just for himself. I have seen a few texts that say Michael, not Raphael, accompanied Gabriel to Sodom, but the majority of them and the Talmud say that it was Raphael and Gabriel who went into Sodom. Now, the names of the angels don't appear in the Bible, and they don't enter Jewish theology until the Babylonian exile. In fact, the Talmud tells us specifically that the names of the angels came to the Jews via Babylon. It amazes me how much the Babylonian exile changes Judaism. We go from a monolarity, that is, one supreme God over many gods, to a monotheism. The commandment isn't, thou shalt have no other gods. It's, thou shalt have no other gods before me. And when God is referred to, very often he's not referred to as just God. He's the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. Those distinctions, those qualifiers are in place all over the place to show which God we're talking about. Genesis 1 is likely added during the Babylonian exile as a parallel to the Babylonian Enuma Elish. And I'd argue that a lot of the false interpretations of the Egyptians' names and phrases, Moses being the most obvious, came during this period as well. Angel hierarchy is first understood then as well. Guardian angels are understood a bit earlier, though. The Talmud tells us that Jacob wrestled with the angel of Esau. Now, that could be the angel representing the material world of Esau against Jacob's spiritual world, testing if Jacob is worthy to become the third patriarch, because that's when his name changes to Israel. Or it could be Esau's guardian angel. I've read two other interpretations. One suggests that the angel was himself Esau, but I don't like that one because Jacob really would recognize his own twin brother. If nothing else, he would recognize him when he saw him the very next day and say, oh yeah, I wrestled you. You pretended to be an angel. The other I've read is that it was Michael. And I think that's a matter of the popular angel picking up random stories as he goes. Much like in the Arthuriad, a lot of the tales went that once belonged to other knights went and became associated with Lancelot. The most known of those would be the Chevalier de la Cartier, which caused a lot of problem. In that story, at the end, originally, Sir Gawain was the hero, and Sir Gawain kissed Guinevere. Well, okay, that's his aunt. Who cares? But when the story gets moved to being Lancelot's, what's he doing locking lips with the queen? I'm going to go with that was probably Esau's guardian who was wrestling Jacob at that point. I have one prayer request this time, and it's for Kelly. Her family is going through a lot with sickness in the family. So if you could pray for a healing for her family and for comfort for them, thank you. But that should wrap us up for this time. Until next time, be blessed and keep knitting.